Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Wednesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We've got good, bad, crazy martinis for you as usual. And, Jim, we start with the good, and that's that today the House of Representatives is going to take up legislation that will delay both the implementation of the employer mandate, which the administration has already set that it needs to do, and so that won't go into effect until the beginning of 2015, but it also wants to delay the individual mandate to that same point. Some Senate Republicans want to just delay them in perpetuity. As this goes on, not only will more Americans probably like what the House is doing here, but the White House has already issued a veto threat to the Republican bills, saying that their passage would help, quote, further efforts to repeal a law that is already helping millions of Americans stay on their parents' plans until age 26, millions more who are getting free preventative care that catches illness early on, and thousands of children with pre-existing conditions who are now covered. Jim, pretty strong statement considering that they agree with half of what the House is doing today.
Let me be clear. If we do not delay the employer mandate, the entire economic system will fall apart. But if we delay the individual mandate, the world will explode. That's how it works. I mean, you know, the GOP has a rather opportunistic but worthwhile argument here, which is that, look, you have this mandate that is totally, you've already kind of admitted, is totally unworkable on the deadline. And, oh, by the way, it's not really clear the president can just arbitrarily decide, nah, we're not going to enforce that part of the law this year. If we're going to change the law, let's do it in the keeping of the Constitution. It's the way we used to do things around here. I guess it's, you know, kind of like the War Powers Act. It's something we don't really pay too much attention to anymore. And so now it'll go to the Senate. It'll die in the Senate. But what's kind of intriguing is that the administration has now been backed into the position of saying, look, we totally need to stop the employer mandate, or at least delay it for a year. But the individual mandate totally has to stay here. And if we do that, the whole thing falls apart. A little bit of political opportunism, but I think it points out to the continuing train wreck that the Obamacare implementation is. In light of this, doesn't sequestration look like the biggest success of the administration in recent weeks? You know, I mean, it's working. You know, they implemented sequestration. It's not like this. We can't implement it. We just can't do it. Sorry. You know, so the Emily Letella never mind approach to legislation. So intriguing that we're now setting the precedent that difficult parts of laws can be just waived. We really wanted to make this policy happen, but it was too hard. So we're not going to do it. Never mind the fact that the law has passed. So continuing chaos in Capitol Hill, but at least the Republicans could and should score some points on this one.
And as we've explained before, a sobering argument against the Senate version for sure, if not other versions of the immigration bill, if the White House is just going to decide to cut and paste whatever it wants to do in terms of how the law actually gets implemented. So on to martini number two now, Jim. And we were just talking Monday, I think it was, that Brian Schweitzer is not running for Senate in Montana. Nate Silver of the New York Times says as a result of that, it looks like the Republican odds of retaking the Senate in 2014, not looking too bad. They got good pickup opportunities in South Dakota and West Virginia, even some Democratic incumbents in big trouble, Mark Pryor, Mary Landrieu. So what the Republicans probably don't need is a Republican bloodbath in a primary for an incumbent Senate seat in Wyoming, where Mike Enzi, who first won in 1996, announced last week he's running for a fourth term. And then yesterday, Liz Cheney, daughter of Dick Cheney, says that she is going to be challenging Enzi next year. Just a couple of clips from her intro video. First of all, she spent most of the time savaging President Obama. This one, I think, was probably the biggest dagger of them all on that front.
He has so effectively diminished our strength abroad that there's no longer a question about whether this was his intent.
When it comes to Enzi, Liz Cheney said this.
I'm running because I believe it is necessary for a new generation of leaders to step up to the plate. I'm running because I know, as a mother and a patriot, we can no longer afford simply to go along to get along. We can't continue business as usual in Washington. I'm running because I know we are taxed more than enough already. I am running because I know Wyoming needs a strong voice in Washington, someone who knows how to get things done and isn't afraid to fight for what's right. I will never compromise when our freedom is at stake.
And so basically, you already have a lot of Republicans divided over this less than 24 hours later, Jim, with the pro-Enzi folks saying that he's perfectly conservative. There's no reason to make a change. Liz Cheney just moved to Wyoming. Liz Cheney folks saying Mike Enzi isn't the guy that stands up and makes a passionate argument for anything, and he's been a go-along-to-get-along guy, as she just kind of said in the statement there. The thing here that's bad for Republicans, though, is they're going to need resources just about everywhere and donors to contribute in some of these much tighter races. Whoever wins this primary is almost certainly going to win the Senate seat, so a lot of resources being diverted towards a fight that possibly didn't need to happen.
This is not really a bad martini because Liz Cheney's jumping in. I think well of her, and I think a lot of folks on the right do. It's not surprising that anybody who has fond memories of Dick Cheney being the vice president of the United States, or who's seen Liz Cheney and seen her as a tough, pugnacious, smart fighter for conservative causes, might be very excited about this. You know, Mike Enzi is not—he's not a Lindsey Graham, he's not a Charlie Crist, he's not a squish by any step of the by a stretch of the imagination. However, he is not known as a fighter, you could say, not the most high-profile guy. And one thing that's worth noting is that he did support the putting sales tax on internet purchases, and that did irk quite a few folks who think of themselves as economic free marketeers. So you're going to see a lot of money go into this race, and maybe, you know, Liz Cheney is an upgrade over Mike Enzi. I do kind of wonder if this is the very best way to spend a conservative dollar, so to speak, in a state that's pretty much going to elect a Republican and going to elect a conservative Republican no matter what. This is a state that's got 166,000 Republicans and 53,000 Democrats. Whatever the turnout is in the Republican primary, both of these campaigns are going to spend oodles of money per vote. And you just have this nagging feeling that money could have been spent somewhere else, probably to greater impact. Maybe it won't be so bad, but you get the feeling this is going to be a big financial expenditure and energy expenditure and focus expenditure to not really change the vote that much between Liz Cheney and Mike Enzi.
Yeah, we'll see what happens there. It'll be a much bigger fight for Mike Enzi than he thought he had. In fact, his first reaction was, Liz Cheney told me if I ran for re-election, she wouldn't. So let the back and forth begin in that fight there. Mike Enzi, just north of 90 all-time in American Conservative Union rating. On to martini number three now, and you mentioned that he's no Lindsey Graham. Well, Lindsey Graham is in our crazy martini here. He has decided that the United States should consider a boycott of the 2014 Winter Olympic Games in Sochi, Russia, if Moscow decides to grant asylum to NSA whistleblower Edward Snowden. This is from The Hill. He says that Russians' recent actions involving Snowden were outrageous and agreed that a boycott should be a possibility when asked. Quote, I would just send the Russians the most unequivocal sign I could send them. We certainly haven't reset our relationship with Russia in a positive way. At the end of the day, if they grant this guy asylum, it's a breach of the rule of law as we know it and is a slap in the face to the United States. And Jimmy Carter stood up and applauded here, I guess, Jim, since he's the one who boycotted the Summer Olympics in Moscow over the Soviet invasion of Afghanistan back in the late 70s. I think you got a lot of people rolling their eyes on this one.
Yeah, and it's not that, you know, Russia is such a terrific place. The idea that Snowden would be the straw that breaks the camel's back in dealings with the Russia, never mind the human rights abuses, never mind their shipping of arms to the Syrian regime. I mean, you can find a lot of reasons to be really upset with the Russian regime. The problem is, you look back to our boycott of the Soviet Union back in 1980, I think a much clearer provocation of the invasion of Afghanistan and their subsequent counter-boycott of Los Angeles back in 84. Does anybody really feel like either one of those boycotts did much to advance the causes that each side wanted to promote?
No.
It's not like we got them out of Afghanistan by boycotting the Olympics. You had a lot of very frustrated Olympic athletes who had been spending years training and then were told they couldn't do so. When you look back and realize that they held the Olympics in Nazi Germany, you can look back and say, there are certain places, certain countries, certain regimes that should not be allowed to host a Olympics. Having said that, the real venue for that argument is with the International Olympics Committee and their selection committee, not necessarily to say, hey, because you won't do this, we're going to not have our athletes participate. And the idea of making Snowden the hill to die on, so to speak, seems like kind of a strange choice. The other thing also is when it comes to the Olympics, it's very hard to use the Olympics as a tool for reform in repressive regimes, because there was this argument going up to the Beijing Olympics that, well, by giving the Olympics to Beijing, China's going to be on its best behavior. It's not going to want to have a crackdown on human rights activists. They're not going to be brutal because they need the world to feel good about the Olympics. That didn't occur. You know, China was every bit as, maybe they dialed it back from a 10 on the oppression scale to about a 9 or a 9.5. I mean, it was a very small change in their behavior. And if you'll recall, Russia invaded Georgia right before the Beijing Olympics. So the whole idea that the Olympics are this useful tool for diplomacy and for getting repressive regimes to change their behavior isn't really borne out by the facts. So I don't know. I'm a bit on the doubtful side that this would do much of an impact. I think it'd frustrate a lot of athletes who are just like, hey, I just want to, you know, ski or figure skate or do, you know, pursue their dreams. I'm skeptical of the idea of the Olympics being this useful tool, and I don't think that Lindsey Graham is really, really leading us in a terribly productive or useful direction on this.
Two thoughts here. First of all, you and I were both pretty young in 1980, but when you think of 1980 Olympic moments, which one stuck it to the Russians better? I'm pretty sure it was the Miracle on Ice rather than not showing up in Moscow. That either one necessarily had a major geopolitical impact, but it certainly impacted U.S. morale to some extent. This could potentially be good news for a guy named Richard Cash. Just read this morning that he's the guy who's challenging Lindsey Graham in the Republican primary in South Carolina in 2014, raised $275,000 in the last quarter. So not sure Graham's in danger, but you at least have some people interested in making that a competitive primary. So.
His opponent has cash.
That's right. Jim, have a great day. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us again on Thursday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.